Last week I was a little down and under the weather. I think it was Thursday afternoon. I actually had a phone conference with the administration regarding Winter Family Weekend and some things. I was feeling fine, but then when the sun started setting Thursday evening last week, felt like I had started crawling in my throat, and before long I had sinus, and I woke up and it just didn't feel good at all, weak and everything else. So talked to Mr. Horchek, and he says, well, those are all the symptoms of the virus that's going around, so you need to go get yourself checked and don't go to services this Sabbath. So I did, and had the test done on Friday afternoon, or actually Friday, I think it's Friday at 2 o'clock is what it was, and I got the results back Monday morning, and it was negative, so it was very positive. So, those very positive results that it was negative. But everybody else in the house has stayed away from catching the sickness that I received. It had been about 4 years since I'd really been sick, so I guess it was time, or I was due. Well, here we are. We're now, 2 weeks removed from the Feast of Tabernacles, and last great day, of course. In some ways, I was sitting thinking about this, some ways it feels like it was forever ago. I know Amanda and I were talking about that this week. It just seems like it was so long ago. But yet, in some ways, it seems like it was just yesterday. But I do hope that each of you had a spiritually uplifting and rejuvenating Feast of Tabernacles wherever you were. I know where some of you were. I know for this year's feast, for us, I see some smiles, it was a bit different, to say the least. You know, I thought last year was different, but this year was more so for us. We had finally, if you will, settled in, and by the end of the third day, I only had one speaking assignment for the feast this year, and I was very excited about that because I was going to be able to spend some time with the family. As of last year, I wasn't able to spend as much. Of course, it was just Amanda and I in Africa, and then the year before, they kept me pretty busy, but that's all right. That's no problem. But I was excited about, hey, one speaking, and it was during the beginning of the feast, so it was on the third day. And so after that, I was able, if you will, to kind of exhale, just a little bit, and enjoy the feast with my family. And so we had plans for the fourth day after services. That fourth day was our day to stay home, if you will, and watch the webcast. They alternated every other day. We were the yellow group, as were the Onstots. So they were home as well watching the webcast. And we had lunch after services were over, and we were all ready, had our plans for the day, and it was a simple day. We're going to the beach. And I was going to go sit out in a chair and enjoy the beach and the ocean and just relax a little bit. Well, it wasn't. Well, we're getting ready to start getting ready to go down to the beach, and Amanda received a phone call from the establishment that we had rented through, and it wasn't the greatest phone call in the world because they told us that we needed to be out of our unit and off the island before evening. And I thought, okay, you talk about a surprise. We were very surprised. We were actually taken aback, not fully processing what we've been asked to do. We've never been asked to do that while at the feast. We were like, are they really telling us we've got to get out of our unit and be out of here? I mean, the unit that we've fully paid for the fifth time, that I might add. But Amanda says, well, give them a call back. So I called them back and called the unit holder back, and I discussed, possible options that we could do. And then talking with the management of the facility that we were in, because where we had rented from was not, of course, the property, if you will, full building owner. So I went and talked to the management of the facility that we were staying with, maybe for some further options. We finally realized there were no other options. So we packed our bags and we left. And so it left no room for further conversation. So we left, like some of you that are here in this room, and like pilgrims on the move is kind of how I felt that it was, and no place to go. I told Amanda, I said, I felt like the pillar of cloud had moved. And all of a sudden, we had to now start packing, and we had to leave, pack up our belongings and start traveling, not really knowing where we were going. And when we left, we really didn't know where we were going. we stopped and we decided as a family that, okay, we have four feast sites in 10 hours away from us. All four of them are 10 hours away from us. There's Fort Myers, Florida. There is Northern Kentucky. There's Branson, Missouri, and Myrtle Beach. And we took a poll, and the consensus was Myrtle Beach. So that's where we went. So we headed that way. But, you know, even though it was odd and it was different, it was totally unforeseen. None of us knew that that was going to happen. Not at all. We did truly have an enjoyable remainder of the feast. And it will be a feast that we don't forget. Not at all. But we did what we could to make the best of it. But after being home, the only reason I mention that is because after being home for a couple weeks, I started thinking back on what transpired and all the different things that a lot of the brethren had to go through. You know, the Hurricane Delta that formed in the Caribbean, and then the mandatory evacuation for non-residents from the by the state of Alabama, the governor, which she should have just waited 24 hours, but but anyhow, and then the pilgrimage for so many, and then what has then since transpired since being home. You know, I began thinking about that. None of it at all, could we have predicted. I didn't go to the feast predicting that I was going to have to leave on the afternoon of the fourth day. Not at all. I didn't predict that. I couldn't. I didn't even think about it. All I was concerned about is having a place to stay on our way down. But and none of this we could have changed either. We couldn't. We did our best to make use of the circumstances that we found ourselves in. You know, when the unknown, if you will, was made known, we had to respond with a decision. All of us that were within that, down in the feast, we had to respond with a decision. Anything that goes on in our life that kind of presents itself, we have to make a decision. And this is exactly how life is for each and every one of us. It is that we must be prepared to navigate the unknown. We have to be prepared to navigate the unknown. And if you want a title for the message today, I did title this one. It is Navigating the Unknown. Navigating the Unknown. You know, this year of 2020 has caused me to give pause and to consider, to stop and consider some things that I believe many of you have probably done the same thing. And in my thinking and kind of putting, you know, what's gone on and the thoughts I've had in my mind, I've kind of, if you will, condensed it to a three-word statement. We don't know. That's exactly how I have condensed everything that's happened in 2020. We don't know. We don't know. There's an idiom out there that I've heard many times, which, and I want to say I don't agree with, that is, and I quote, "What you don't know won't hurt you." And I feel that that is absolutely baloney. What you don't know will come up behind you and bite you in the backside, if you're not prepared in how to respond to the unknown when it is made known. We are now post-feast, and we're getting ready to go through what has been tagged, what? The dark days of winter. We've just finished up memorializing and reflecting on the awesome plan of God for 2020. And we've just finished celebrating what is one day soon coming to this dark, lost world in the future. And I believe it's in the not-too-distant future. But of all people, just getting home from the Feast of Tabernacles and, of course, the last great day, we should be, if you will, on fire for the dark days of winter and ready to weather the days that are ahead of us. But really, to be honest with you, are we ready for the unknown? Are we ready to weather the unknown? Are we ready to navigate yet another year that may bring about things and situations that we have, if you will, once again never experienced in our lifetimes before? You know, I'm not standing up here saying that I'm predicting that something is going to happen. Not at all. Or in the next months or year or whatever, and the things are going to get worse. Not at all. Actually, I'm praying and I'm hoping that things settle down for a little while. That's my prayer. That way we can catch our breath, if you will, before the next wave comes through. But either way, are we prepared and able to go forward towards the kingdom of God through all the unknowns that are yet ahead of us? That's a question I feel like we ought to ask ourselves. There are many things we just don't know. So many things that we just don't know. So in the message today, I actually want to briefly look at what we don't know. what we don't know. Then I want to come in and back up, I guess come on the back side of this, and talk about things that we do know. Things that we do know. My goal actually for this particular message today is for you to be encouraged and for it to be a positive sermon. At least that's my hope that it will be. So what is it that we don't know? What is it that we don't know? And I feel like what I'm getting ready to say pretty much sums everything that we don't know up into one little package. This is what we don't know. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. How many in here know what tomorrow will bring? Exactly. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. We don't know what a day will bring about. You know, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 9:11, he said, "The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to us all." Isn't that true? Time and chance happen to us all. I was looking at some news after we got home, and there was actually, it was a truck cam. It was one of the big trucks that had a truck cam that was set up in their truck, and they caught an accident that was in Birmingham, Alabama, back on October 6th. And they were northbound on Interstate 60, I think 65, going through Birmingham. And all of a sudden, they are showing this video, and everything's going along fine. Traffic's going along fine. How many of you saw this? Nobody? Traffic's going along fine, and all of a sudden, it's where they're 69 and 65, I believe, are merging, if I've got my roads right. But anyhow, this truck off the far right, all of a sudden you see it, everything's fine, everybody's happy, hunky-dory, and all of a sudden this truck goes flying across out of the far right and hits this car. This little Prius is what it was, and it shot this car over and hits this big truck, and the big truck actually, and people are doing about 75 miles an hour. 70 miles an hour. This truck actually veers off to the left, hits the Prius, flips, hits another car on the other side, and this truck goes off the overpass, whole truck and all. Did any of those people think that was going to happen to them that day? Absolutely not. And I was just thinking about that and thought, wow, you know, and the guy was from Gulf Shores, Alabama. The guy driving the truck, he actually died. But no one really knows what a day will bring. None of us know what today has in store. When we get up in the morning, we don't know. We don't know how the day will really end. Yes, we have a plan. We have a plan for the day, and this is what we want to get accomplished for the day, and we want to come home, and we want to be safe. Yes, all of us have a plan for the day, but we do not and we cannot control the outcome of every day. Most days end up how we plan. Most days do, but some days just don't. Some days just don't end up that way. Proverbs 27:1, Solomon said, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth." From the wisest human being that's ever been on this earth, well, besides Jesus Christ, of course. You know, if we've learned anything in 2020 so far, we've learned anything in 2020, we know that tomorrow can be totally different than today. Totally different than today. Things can happen so rapidly. Things can just happen the drop of a hat. From one morning to the afternoon, things can be different. Let's go to James 4. James 4. James 4, we'll start in verse 13. Here we're told, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit." He says, "Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow." We do not know what will happen tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. Isn't that true? We must today be concentrating on today. Jesus Christ actually told us that back in Matthew 6:34. What did he say? He told us right after Matthew 6:33, where he says, "Seek you first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness." And he says, "All these things will be added unto you." Then he goes on to say, he says, "Don't worry about tomorrow." He says, "Don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own." And he went on to say, "Because today has its enough of its own challenges. Concentrate on that. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." We have different things that we have to go through in our life that we have to focus on today. And I'm not saying you don't plan for the future or anything like that. That was what we're supposed to do. That's the prudent thing to do. But at the same time, there are so many unknowns, if you will, out there. How can you plan for the unknowns? And we're going to talk about that as we go along. You know, as Jesus Christ said, sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Well, we may not have, he says, sufficient for this day, today, is its own trouble. Because we may not have tomorrow. We may not. At the end of James 4, verse 14, I didn't finish it up. We'll finish it up now. It says in verse 14, it says, "For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time, and then it vanishes away." It vanishes away. This is actually a fact of life. It is a fact of life. We cannot guarantee we will actually be here tomorrow, can we? None of us can. None of us can guarantee that. None of us can predict what the next day will bring about. We don't know what is yet ahead of us. We may try, but we just don't know. For instance, and I've thought about this, and I keep hearing, we know we're in the middle of a presidential election and all that, but they have all these polls that are out there. Why do they have polls? So they can predict the future. That's why they have polls. That's my opinion of why they have polls. So they can predict who's gonna win. That's how I feel. Well, the polls may say one thing, but the reality of it is we just don't know, do we? We don't know who's going to be the next president of the United States, if that's how you want to put it. Just, and if you want to add this into it, just as we don't know the fallout that could happen from who ends up winning the election. We don't know what 2021 is going to be like. We just don't know. We don't know if the effects of this virus are going to get worse or they're going to get better. We don't know if the increased lockdowns, and this has happened in the UK, will cause things to get better or cause worsening and upheaval and further strains on the nation. And then, of course, with all the different things going on in the world as well. There are so many other things that we don't know. We don't know if China is going to continue to flex its muscle and more and bring about a war. We know things are going to happen, don't we? But we just don't know how, and we don't know when. Personally, we don't know the trials that may come about in the days, weeks, or even months or years ahead. Trials just seem to come up, don't they? They seem to crop up. How many of you have ever really seen a trial? Oh, it's coming. I got about 2 weeks to prepare for it. Well, okay, maybe some of us have, and I hope you prepared for it whenever you saw it. But most trials usually come out of the blue. They usually creep at us, or they hit us right upside the head. You know, I'll add this then. We don't know when the persecution of the church is going to begin, do we? Can any of you put a date on it? I guarantee you we can't. None of us can put a date on it. We don't know when it will begin or gain ground or become really bad. We just don't know. The only obvious understanding about the unknown is that we don't know. We don't know. A focus on the unknown can actually in turn cause doubt and depression. With a focus on the unknown. The what ifs of the unknown can cause anxiety. And what comes from anxiety? Fear, right? But ignoring the unknowns can cause, if you will, damaging denial and damaging distrust. This world that we live in is full of the unknown. It's full of the unknown. So how do we navigate through what we just don't know? How do we navigate through that? Well, I will submit to you by leaning on and hanging on to the things we do know. The things we do know. The things we know will help us in how we handle and navigate through what we don't know. I'm using the word know a lot in this message. I've caught myself, but that's okay. We spent a lot of time at the feast talking and discussing the things that we've been given the understanding of, the things that we do know. And that is what the plan of God explains to us, what we do know. What we do know of the things that have been done, the things that are being done, the things that will be done, that are yet going to be done. The things yet to happen are what we should focus on and rely on as we navigate through this world of unknowns. So what do we know? What do we know? And that's what I want to go over for the remainder of the message, what we do know. There's a lot of things we know. And I feel like it would be helpful to us as we go forward after this Feast of Tabernacles, because if we concentrate on the things that we do know, it will help us get through the unknown. It will. So the first thing that we do know, first of all, I said I wanted this to be encouraging, but the first thing that we do know is we know things are going to get worse. We do know that. We know things are going to get worse. Let's go to Mark. Mark 13. I promise, I hope this is an encouraging message. Mark 13. Mark 13, verse 7. Jesus Christ says, "But when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be troubled, for such things must happen, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be earthquakes in various places, and there will be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows." He says, "But watch out for yourselves, for they will deliver you up to councils, and you will be beaten in the synagogues. You will be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony to them. And the gospel," it says, "must first be preached to all nations. But when they arrest you and deliver you up, do not worry beforehand or premeditate what you'll speak, but whatever is given you that hour, speak that, for it is not you that speaks, but the Spirit within you. Now brother will betray brother to death, and father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death." And he says, "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end shall be saved." Talks about, he says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, he says, "Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter. For in those days there will be tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days," he says, "no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose," it says, "he shortened those days." So we just read here, times of trouble are going to get worse. They're going to continually getting worse, worse than they are now. Situations are going to become more prevalent as we go forward in this life. So we must, and I want to underscore that, we must come to grips. We have to come to grips with this. We must, and we must be preparing our lives spiritually. There is no amount of physical preparation, no amount of food, no amount of money that will save us from the things that are coming. You just read that back in verse 15 and 16, because he says, "Let him who's on the housetop, don't go back into your house. Let him," he says, "who is in the field, don't go back to get his clothes. When it's time to leave, it's time to leave." That's what he's saying. So in other words, there's no amount of physical preparation that you can do to save us from the things that are coming down the pike. Rather, we must be preparing spiritually to be able to stay faithful and, as it says, endure to the end. We must be preparing. Yeah, this is sobering. It really is. I know, but as things happen, they shouldn't surprise us because we've been given the understanding of what we know is coming. And if you want to stop and you want to look through chapter, well, you can go back to Matthew 24, you can go to Mark 13 here, and there are time points in here. It doesn't give you dates, but there's time stamps to where when you see these things happening, you know that this is going to happen. When you see this is happening, you know this is going to happen. So none of this should surprise us. Yes, how they happen may surprise us. How they happen may surprise us, but not that they have come to pass. It should not take us off guard. It should not be an unknown to us. We cannot be caught spiritually off guard. We must remember that we know things are going to get worse. We know that. And we must understand that and come to grips with that. The second thing, we know that this physical life is temporary. We know that this physical life is temporary. We hear that a lot. We do. And we heard that a lot at the feast. At least we did where we were at. But sometimes I believe we lose the meaning of this, the full meaning of this, by focusing on the fact that our life is brief. That's what we focus on, that our life is brief. You know, though this is true. It is true. Our life is but for a moment, if you will. It was David said it was like vapor. That's what David mentioned that it was. I mean, we understand that we will die. That's a given fact. Our lives are temporary. Ecclesiastes 3:20, Solomon said, all go to one place, all from the dust, all are from the dust, and they return to the dust. And I feel like Solomon was probably bringing up what was written in Genesis 3:19, where God told Adam and Eve, from dust you were formed, and to dust you shall return. You know, one day we will all go back to the dust from which we were created, unless, of course, Jesus Christ returns before our death. You know, our lives are exactly what David said, a breath and a vapor. And as James stated back in James 4:14 that we read a little bit ago, in Psalm 89:48, David wrote, What man can live and not see death? Can he deliver his life from the power of the grave? Well, the answer to that question is no. Nobody can deliver themselves from the power of the grave. Not at all. And you think, oh, well, this is real encouraging, Nathan. Well, bear with me just a little bit, okay? You know, that's what we just discussed is only part of the definition. The definition of temporary and the definition that we focus on a lot. Yes, we need to understand the reality of the frailty of our lives. And our lives are frail and they are precious. They are. Absolutely. But we need to focus, I feel, also on the other side of this word, the other meaning of this word. Temporary means lasting for only a limited period of time. Okay? Well, that's what we've just discussed. But it also means not permanent. Okay, well, that can mean the same thing, but that's actually what I want to focus on, not permanent. Let's go to Psalm 116. Psalm 116, we're only going to read one verse in Psalm 116, and you've probably read this verse before. Psalm 116, verse 15. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Why? Well, because God knows that this life is temporary, and he's going to give us something better. He's going to give us something better, because when a saint of God dies, that means a saint of God dies, because right here he says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. The next waking moment of the saint of God after they go to sleep in the grave, their next waking moment is eternity. It is eternity. This physical life is not permanent. There is more. There is more. That's something that should have been reignited, if you will, brightly in our minds while we were at the feast this year. We do not look at the things, as we're told, the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, because the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. We know that. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5, and let's start in verse 1. Here we're told, the Apostle Paul is talking to the church in Corinth. He says, for we know that if our earthly house, this tent, he's talking about his physical body, our physical body, is destroyed. We have a building. We don't have a tent. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, but is eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with that habitation, which is from heaven. Indeed, if indeed having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we who are in this tent groan, being burdened not because we want to be unclothed. Oh, we don't want to die, no, but we want to further be clothed. We want mortality to be swallowed up with life. That's what we want. Yes, our lives on this earth are not permanent. Our lives in eternity will be permanent, eternally permanent. You can't get any more permanent than that, can you? I don't think so. Not at all. Not at all. And I feel like this is very, very encouraging, because he goes on to say, he says, now he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given to us the Spirit. His Spirit is a guarantee for the day of redemption. Drop down to verse 7. For we walk by what? Faith, not by sight. As I said a little bit ago, we don't look at the things, we don't focus on the things which are temporary. We focus on those things which are eternal. This brings me up to the next thing that we know. The next thing that we know, God is in full control of what goes on in this world. God is in full control of what goes on in this world, not Satan. I mean, Satan wants you to feel that. He wants you to think that he's in control of what's going on here, but he's not. Do you remember the account of Job? Did he have any control over what he did to Job? Not until God gave him the permission. Not until God gave him the permission. Not until God, if you will, let loose of that leash. But you notice every time he says, but you don't touch the man. You can do this, but don't touch the man. Well, you can touch him, but you can't kill him. You know, God either allows things to happen or he doesn't allow things to happen. And God establishes governments and he establishes leaders, and he then puts those governments, he can put those governments down and he can put those leaders down. It is not up to us and it is not up to anyone else. It is up to God. It is up to God. Let's go back to Daniel 2. We can actually see that. Daniel 2. Here, Daniel was asking for the Nebuchadnezzar's dream, his first dream that he had, to be revealed to him so he could give it, so he could give the meaning to King Nebuchadnezzar. And in verse 20, after God had given him, if you will, the revelation of what it was this dream was about, Daniel says this to God. And if you notice at the end of verse 19 of chapter 2, it says, so Daniel blessed the God of heaven because he had revealed to him what had happened or what this dream was about. And what did Daniel say? Daniel answered and said, he says, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And God changes the times and the seasons. God removes kings and raises up kings. God gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals the deep and secret things, and he knows what is in the darkness and light, it says, dwells with him. It is God who is in control. It is God that is in full control. Go back to Daniel 4, verse 17. This is Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. And after he had this dream, I feel like Nebuchadnezzar. It says, Nebuchadnezzar, the king to all peoples, nations, languages that dwell in the earth, in verse 1. I feel like he wrote this after. This is my opinion. After this dream came to fruition and after the 7 years that he was a wild animal. I think he gave an account of what had happened. But in verse 17, he's saying in his dream, this was a decree that was made in his dream. This is what was revealed in the dream to Nebuchadnezzar in verse 17. It says, this decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the Holy One, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. Here it is, God sets over the kingdoms whom he will. And we know that it came true, because in verse 25, whenever he explained the dream to the king, he explained to him that the God, and I believe it's verse 25, he says, they shall drive you from men, is what he was telling Nebuchadnezzar. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over you till Nebuchadnezzar knew that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomever he chooses. You know, when it is time for a king or a president to be removed, God will make sure of it. He will. He will make sure of it. When it is time for a kingdom or a country to be defeated, God will allow it. He will. And it can happen literally overnight. Because you can go here to Daniel 5. We won't read all of the account here of Belshazzar's feast and of Belshazzar's account that Belshazzar was actually Nebuchadnezzar's son and took the reins of the throne after his father had died. Well, he knew of all that had gone on. And here you have, in chapter 5, you have Belshazzar taking the things that were holy and using them for just regular, ordinary things, for just a party, if you will. And here that night, do you think he knew that his empire that he was over would fall that night? I don't think he did whenever he started his party that night. I don't think that at all. And what does it say happened whenever the hand came and inscribed what it inscribed on the wall? It says that his countenance changed and pretty much his knees knocked. and probably lost control of a lot of different things. And he was scared beyond belief. And what was written was that everything had been weighed and in the balance, and it would be overthrown. And it says that it will be, and his kingdom was going to be divided. And in verse 30 of chapter 5, it says, That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, the Babylonian kingdom. He received it all. You know, God works in the governments of men. He does. And he does it to continue his plan and his purpose. In Isaiah 46, there's a little more that we need to look at. Isaiah 46 and verse 9. We'll read verse 9 and verse 10. Verse 9, it says, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me." God declares, he says, declaring the end from the beginning and from the ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, "My counsel shall stand, and I will do all of my pleasure." God will do all of his pleasure. Our God, the very one who has called us to his Son to become partakers in his family, it is his counsel that shall stand. His counsel shall stand, and he shall do all of his pleasure. There is nothing that our Father in heaven cannot do. Nothing. Nothing. He is the God of the universe, and there is nothing too hard for him. Nothing at all that is too hard for him. There's nothing he cannot do. You can go back to Jeremiah 32, and you can read that. I think it's in verse 17 and verse 27. So I just want to reemphasize, no matter who is the president of the United States after January 20th, 2021, no matter the unforeseen things that go on in this country for the remainder of this year and into 2021, no matter the things that go on in other countries around the world, no matter the natural disasters that strike, no matter any uprisings that happen, riots or whatever it may be, always remember, God's in full control. He is in full control. Yes, it seems that God is letting the reins loose of Satan on Satan, but never forget that God is always and fully in control. He is always and fully in control. We may not understand why things have to happen the way that they do. And, you know, there's times I shake my head and I think, why? Why does it have to happen that way? But we must remember that things in this life will only transpire. Things in this life will only transpire the way they do because God has or hasn't allowed it. Sometimes he lets us, if you will, inherit our own, the repercussions of our own sins. God allows that. You can go back to Deuteronomy 28 and go back to Leviticus 26, the blessings and the cursings. And God is, he said, if you follow me and you do my way of life, you will have these blessings. And if you don't, he says, these will come about. God allows it. Could God stop it? Absolutely. But he doesn't. Not always. You know, sometimes we think, why doesn't God just make it stop? Why doesn't he just make it stop? Or why doesn't he just intervene? Because it seems so obvious to us, so obvious to us that it would be best if he did. Well, all I can say to that is God's thoughts and his ways are above our ways and thoughts. He sees and knows things that we don't. He does. God does know best and will only allow those things, only allow certain things to get so bad before he intervenes. Remember, God tells us that he won't allow us to be tempted any more than we can handle. And we're also told that he is going to, what does it say, intervene on behalf of the elect's sake. At getting close to the time of the end, at the time of the end. So this brings me to the next thing that we know. The next thing that we know is this. Through many trials, we will inherit the kingdom. Through many trials, we will inherit eternal life. Acts 14. I want to back that up. Acts 14, verse 21. It says, "And when they had preached the gospel of that city," and who they are, would be Paul and Barnabas. It says, and made many disciples. They returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. It says, strengthening, they went back to strengthen the souls of the disciples, exhorting them, they're encouraging them to continue in the faith. Because they're going through some hard times. A lot of things that they're going through, I guarantee you, they didn't know were coming about. It says, we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. We must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. So I'm going to say this is not something that should surprise any of us. Not at all. We of all people should understand that if we are not being tested on something, we have something to be concerned about. That's just my opinion. Actually, no, it's not my opinion because let's go back. Actually, back in Hebrews 12, actually mentions this. Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12. Let's actually start in verse 3. It says, for consider him, Jesus Christ, who endured such hostility from sinners against himself. It says, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You haven't gotten to that point in your life, it says, that you've resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. You haven't died because you've been the tribulation that you've gone through. It says, and the things that you had to go through. And you've not forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. Don't despise the discipline. It says, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens. It says, and he scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons, as his children. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? A father and a mother, they're going to discipline their children. Why? Because they love them. Because they know that there's something better that they're going to become. It goes on to say furthermore, now actually in verse 8, but if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, he says, then you are illegitimate and not sons. You are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who have corrected us and we've paid them respect. We've understood why they disciplined us. So he's saying, he goes on to say, so shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? In other words, the one who is over all, the one who calls us children and we call Father, he says, I'm trying to form you in to something that I know you will become. That's what he's doing. Goes on to say, for they, and he's talking about their fathers, for indeed for a few days, and mothers chastened us as seemed best to them. But God does it for our profit. And what is that profit? The profit of soon, one day, becoming eternal members in his family, that we may be partakers of his holiness. He goes on to say, now no chastening, none of it seems to be joyful for the present, but it's painful. It does seem that way, doesn't it? And you notice he uses the word seems. It seems to be painful. It doesn't seem to be joyful, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, though, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been what? Trained by it. To those who have been trained by it. All of the chastening and the trials of life, you know, God is using those. He's using those to prepare us to become eternal members in his family. You know, even the testing and the trials that we go through and we learn from today, what we are learning from today can actually be put into use today to help each other. To help each other, to help our own fellow family members. We can help by explaining what we've learned. What we've learned. We can help by, you know, explaining to them maybe some similar issues that we've gone through and how God helped us through it. You know, God, we can explain how God brought us through the trial and how we became a better person because of it. And how we grew. Yeah, I know. A trial can be weighty. But, you know, don't let it ever confound you. I guess that's the best word to use. Don't let it ever confound you. Always remember that God is refining us, and he's not just refining us, he's not personally, he's refining our brothers and sisters too. We are all going through, if you will, the refining fire. We're all going through trials. I mean, you can go back to 1 Peter 5, I believe it's verse 9 is where it talks about, you know, your brotherhood. Actually, let's just go back there. 1 Peter 5. Let's start in verse 6. It talks about, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time. And he says, casting all your care, all the things that you're going through and such, all the different things that you're concerned about, he says, cast it upon him, for he cares for you. Cast it on him because he'll be your strength. And then it's amazing, right after that, he says, you've got to do that because you have to be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, goes about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Because whenever we get so focused on the unknown, if you will, the things that we can't control, Satan's got a door in. But in verse 9 it says, resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory, he said, by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while. You know, trials do this to us. And that's what he's getting ready to say. After you have suffered a while, what does it do? It says it will perfect you. It will establish you. It will strengthen you. And it will settle you. That's what it will do. We know that through many trials we'll inherit eternal life. But we know it's for our good. The next thing we know, God will always be there to help those who love him. God will always be there to help those who love him. Always. Let's go back to Psalm. Psalm 121. And we'll start in verse 1. And if you'll notice the tag at the top of this, kind of the introduction, it says, God the help to those who seek him. God the help to those who seek him. In verse 1, it says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From there, it says, comes my help. It says, my help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your protector. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you. The Lord shall keep you, it says, from all evil. He shall keep your soul. The Lord will preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth. And then he says, and even forevermore. That's an encouraging, just little 8 verses right there. Very encouraging. We do not need to fear the unknown, knowing that our God is there to help us. He is with us always. Our God is there to guide us. He's there to protect us. He's there to defend us, to guard us, to deliver us, to heal us, to watch over us. He is. And he's there to help us when we fall down. And sometimes he's there to help carry us when it doesn't seem like we can go any further. You know, when we seek him with all of our heart, our Father in heaven will be there. He will be there always for us. He will be there. Let's go back to Hebrews 13 and build on this just a little more. Hebrews 13. In Hebrews 13 here, as we get started, actually verse 1 through 6, actually 1 through 5, has everything to do with showing love for one another. It does. Serving others, doing things for others, putting others before yourself. That's what this has to do with right here. And as we read that, think about this, because it goes on to say, it's kind of the concluding remarks here. It says, let brotherly love continue. That's how he kind of starts it here. He says, do not forget to entertain strangers. For by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. You know what it's like to be mistreated. He talks about marriage is honorable among all, the bed undefiled. You know, I mean, that shows love for your mate whenever the bed is undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with those things that you have. Because remember, God has said himself, he won't leave you nor forsake you. And he says in verse 6, so that we may boldly say this. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? And God says, if you love me, you'll love your brother. You can go back to 1 John 4, where it discusses that right before you get into 1 John 5. You know, to love God, we must first love one another by showing each other the same care that our loving Father shows to us. Then no matter the unknowns that become known, we know God will be there to help us. And we will be there then to help one another without reservation. We'll be there to help one another without reservation. And then these are the words that we can say. Romans 8. Because as was mentioned at the end of verse 6 there in Hebrews, you know, the Lord is my helper. What can man do to me? Let's go to Romans 8. Romans 8. Romans 8 and verse 31. Romans 8, verse 31. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He, God, the Father, did not spare his own Son, but he delivered him up for us all. How shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? That doesn't matter, because guess what? Our Father is the one that justifies. He says, who is he who condemns? Is it not Christ who died and furthermore is also risen? It is through him that we are not condemned. He says, and furthermore, who is even at the right hand of God who also makes intercession for us? He says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? And these are all questions. Goes on to say, for your sake, we are killed all day long. He says, and accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Even if that happens. He says, yet in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. And in verse 38, for I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. And this should actually cause us to just kind of pause for a moment. Just pause for a moment and smile. It really should. You know, this should grant us a peace of mind, realizing that no matter what comes about, what comes about tomorrow, no matter the unrest in this world around us, no matter the trials that we will face or may face right now, no matter the uncertainty of the days, months, years, whatever it is ahead of us, we know that our Father is in full control and he'll be there to help us through whatever may come our way. He will be. And he will use those trials of this life to form us into his very character and prepare us to lead within the realm of his kingdom that will one day be established on this earth. How exciting that is. How encouraging it is, the things that we know. And that brings me to the final thing that we know. The final thing that we know is this. In a world of unknowns, we know the end of it all. We know the end of it all. The end of it all is this. And we've been told this before. We win. We win. We know that this temporary life will one day be replaced with something far greater. Far greater, something we cannot even begin to fully wrap our minds around, things that we can't even grasp. Something that we're told that is truly dimly in a mirror that we see it. But one day we will see it fully. And we've been given a true and unaltered view, if you will, into the future, haven't we? We've been given a true view and an unaltered view into the future. We know what's coming. And we know the end of it all. We know what God has planned. Do we know all the specifics? No, we don't. But he has given us the end result. You know, don't let that fade from the view of your mind. Don't let that fade away, because we're going to need it as we continue forward. We know that no matter what happens in this physical life, if we stay the course, if we navigate through the unknowns that are ahead of us faithfully, until the end, or our end physically, whatever, you know, of whether or not Jesus Christ returns or where we are asleep when he returns, we will inherit eternity. We will. No matter what unknowns get thrown at us as we go forward, no matter the unrest that begins to happen and worsen, no matter the unraveling of our nation, no matter how much it looks like the evil ones are winning, no matter the persecution we may face, we of all people should not become discouraged. We shouldn't. But rather, we should be faithful and rejoicing until the end, because we know what the end brings. Because we know the end of it all. As I said a little bit ago, we win. Don't ever lose sight of that. Don't ever lose sight of what we have been so graciously granted. Things that we have been so wonderfully granted to know. And the things that we've been given the understanding of, the things that we know, and what I would say in a world of unknowns. So keep going forward, and may God be with you this week as we go through another week, and that you guys will all be able to be here for Sabbath services next Sabbath. All right, we do have one more hymn before we close.